from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Tim Poney, OneRadioNetwork.com. It's January 15th, 2019. Good morning. David Getoff, a detox professor. He's a clinical nutritionist, certified naturopath. He'll be here in 1 hour. 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour. I'm counting. He's a good one. And so kind of a surprise guest for you. We didn't even put on the show page because it didn't happen until kind of the last mementos. We were going to do open phone email today for the first hour. Just didn't come around to getting the kind of guests that we wanted. And we've been kind of thinking of this fellow for a while, who's waiting in the wings in the green room because of the different conversations we've had about fluoride over the past couple years, actually, with talking with Dr. Ellie Phillips and others, and the pineal gland that always comes up about calcification and fluoride and stuff like that. Well, we are going to chat it up with Paul Conant. Remember Paul Conant? Well, how would you remember him? He was on the show, gosh, I think it's been 10 years. I mean, I can't believe that. And he's a fluoride monster. He's been looking at, well, his wife doesn't think he's a monster. He's been looking at fluoride for, gosh, almost 25 years or so. He's a professor emeritus at St. Lawrence University, and he's been making an argument for getting fluoride out of everything, period. The website, his main one, is fluoridealert.org, and he says you got to make sure you spell that with F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E. And don't do fluoridealert.com, because that turns out that's the American Dental Association. Well, Mr. Conant, good morning. I won't do the .com thing then.
Yeah, well, when we formed this webpage in 2000 was when we launched it.
Uh-huh.
And immediately the American Dental Association captured all the sites around. I think they captured .com and .net. So people that were looking for us were diverted to the ADA's propaganda, which is it's unethical to do that. But
Well, no. Well, good morning. First off, nice to have you here.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you again, Patrick.
Yeah, it's been a while. You're from Brighton in England, down the street from the Queen Mum, right?
Yes. Well, yes, I was born in Sussex, and I spent my wicked years, my teens, in Brighton.
Yeah. Did they fluoride the water back then?
No, they don't fluoridate much in England. Only about 10%, and most of it is concentrated in the Midlands, Birmingham, Wolverhampton.
Oh, really?
Around that area. Just 10% of the population in England. Now, they've never been able to push that up much higher, though they keep trying. They keep trying in England to do it, but so far the citizens have been very sensible and have rejected it.
Oh, so the folks are that much up on it, and they stay kind of tuned into the local water supply and push back on it?
Oh, yeah. When they hear about it, when the public hears about it, as in most places, and they start reading, they're appalled, as I was back in 1996, when you actually read the literature, which is not what dentists are encouraged to do, by the way. They're encouraged to go out and say it's safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. And they're even told you don't need to read the literature. Just take their word for it, which is a pretty unprofessional way of going about a serious topic like this. But when you, as a scientist, read the literature with an open mind, it's pretty shocking, and it's got far more shocking, Patrick, since we last talked.
Really?
Back in September of 2017 was a bombshell, and I'll put that bombshell in context. When I got involved in 1996, the issue that was very prominent at that time, or was just emerging into prominence, was the publication of the first two IQ studies from China. These are studies from China which were showing that children with higher exposure to fluoride had a lower IQ in their testing.
Really?
The first two was published in 1996. There have been at least 60 IQ studies now published, and of those, 53 show the same thing, a lowering of IQ associated with higher exposure to fluoride. Now, a lot of these studies from China and India and Mexico and so on have received a lot of criticism for not controlling various factors and for using higher levels of fluoride or looking at higher levels of fluoride than we're exposed to today. Some of those criticisms are valid, some are not. But it's all moot because in September of 2017, there was a published study financed, listen to this, this study was financed by the U.S. government agencies. It was financed by the Environmental Protection Agency, the National Institute of Health, and most importantly, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. This was a multi-million dollar study. It was carried out over 12 years. It involved individual measurements, not community measurements. And they discovered that the most vulnerable period as far as the child's developing brain and fluoride's impact was the fetus during fetal development.
Hmm.
And the way they demonstrated, this was an excellent study. It was done by people who've had a lot of experience with publishing amongst themselves over 50 studies of a similar nature looking at lead and mercury and so on. So these people knew what they were doing. They came from very prestigious universities, Toronto, McGill, Indiana, Michigan, Harvard, Mount Sinai, and so on, you name it. So, top-notch study. And what they found is a very strong association. Remember, association doesn't prove cause and effect. But they found a very strong association between the level of exposure of the pregnant mum as measured by the urine fluoride levels in the urine. And that's important because the levels in the urine reflect total exposure from all sources. So it doesn't matter if they're drinking fluoridated water, using fluoridated salt, getting fluoridated pesticides in their food or whatever. Whatever the source, a measure of total exposure is the fluoride levels in their urine. And that level in their urine was strongly associated with lowered IQ in their offspring as measured at 4 years of age and again between 6 and 12. And subsequently, 1 year later, they have found the same thing applies to children between 1 and 3. And subsequently, they have found that with the same cohort, it's associated with symptoms of ADHD.
Really?
So this is I can't tell you how devastating this is, how significant this is from a scientific point of view. Think about it.
So when you say individualized rather than, what was the other term you used?
Community-based. In other words, nearly all the previous studies, and the subject of certain criticism, is you weren't measuring individual children, you were measuring the levels in a community. You were comparing community X with high fluoride levels in their water, sometimes in other sources like coal burning, high fluoride exposed children with low fluoride, but not individual-based measurements, community-based. These are considered to be the weakest of epidemiological studies when you don't have individual measurements.
I see. But these were individuals.
What this study ended up with was 300 mother-childhood pairs, 300 pairs. So you measure the fluoride levels in the mother's urine during pregnancy, and you measure the IQ of the children when they're born, and you've got, 2 data points then for for each spot. You've got the level in the mother, and you've got the IQ of the child, and you plot the whole things out, and you see that as the fluoride level goes up in the mum, the IQ goes down in the kid.
So that's what you call association, where you can't say, this is a fact, but this the association is obviously there, is in your opinion.
Yeah, well, you've got to control, there's always the potential for confounding variables. But these guys knew what they were doing, and they looked at every conceivable variable, relevant variable. And it's none of these variables, when they are controlled for them, changed this relationship. It was strong even after all the things that they considered, age of birth and all kinds of
things. I wonder how Paul Conant, by the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Nobody uses the phone anymore because people talk with their thumbs, but you can try it, and you know, you might still remember. 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. I'm curious that generally when the government, you know, the one we love, gets involved with this and that, they tend to kind of hold hands with the different, you know, the big guys, you know, whether it be Big Pharma or obviously the AMA. And I'm curious why they even stepped outside their kind of a model, knowing that the ADA is right down the street in Washington, D.C., or whatever they hang out, and even say this. I mean...
Well, they didn't. This is the thing. They funded these studies. I guess they felt they had to, because the number of studies that were coming out of China and India and Mexico and Iran was growing and growing by the year. As I said, it got up to about 60 studies. And then one of our members, actually, Dr. Bill Osmondson, is a very active dentist in Washington State and also former director of our organization. He approached the NIEHS and asked them to look at the literature on fluoride's neurotoxicity, the animal literature and the human literature. So that was, I think, part of the interest there in terms of these government agencies' funding. But considering it was a 12-year study, we have to go further back to see why the U.S. government agencies funded this study. And one of the reasons is probably the National Research Council in 2006 produced a landmark review of fluoride's toxicity, and they looked at then there were 5 IQ studies, and they called for more research. So it's quite possible that was the catalyst for the U.S. government finally to fund studies, significant studies. And I've got to say that since the U.S. government endorsed fluoridation in 1950 via the U.S. Public Health Service, before there was any science, real science, on the table, their modus operandi was not to research the issue, but to promote it. It's all been promotion. It's all been policy-driven, not science-driven. So they really had little interest in funding studies to look at fluoride's harmful effects, possible harmful effects.
Do we know who was really behind the whole 1950 thing when this first came out?
Well, it's a toss-up between two forces. Obviously, it wasn't a scientific decision. There's two possibilities. One, a whole book has been written on this by Christopher Bryson, former BBC producer. It took 10 years to write this book. It's called The Fluoride Deception. You can find a 28-minute interview I have with Chris on our homepage. If you go to FanTV, fluoridealert.org, remember, FanTV, you'll find this interview with Chris Bryson. And basically, his thesis was that it was industry that was producing fluoride as an air pollutant, fluoride that was possibly exposing its workers to industry that was exposing its workers, all concerned about lawsuits. And he points to the collusion between the U.S. Public Health Service and the Fluorine Lawyers Association. And the Fluorine Lawyers Association had only one mission in life, and that was protect industry against lawsuits. So he documents all that beautifully. Obviously, collusion between industry and government to, if you like, changed the image of fluoride from the most, the worst air toxic pollutant that had done more damage to agriculture than any other pollutant, to this stuff that was safe enough to put on your cornflakes, give to your kiddies, brush on your teeth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one line of argument. It's a very, very well documented case. And the other issue is the sugar lobby. You know, 1 year before the U.S. government endorsed the practice, this 1949, the sugar lobby in its newsletter called the Sugar Molecule said, we need to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption.
Oh.
And they promoted fluoridation ever since. I mean, the sugar lobby put millions of dollars into the dental departments of major universities like Harvard. The classic case is Dr. Fred Stare, who got his whole department financed by the sugar industry, promoted fluoridation all his life into his late 80s. He was a founding member of the American Council on Science and Health, a real propagandist outfit for industry. He extolled the virtues of sugar as a nutrient. He even said to Congress that Coca-Cola was a nutritious drink, which will surprise some of your listeners, I think. And he also promoted fluoridation and was the prototype of that proponent of fluoridation that doesn't just talk about so-called science. They didn't have much of it, but he would attack opponents of fluoridation as being Looney Tunes, Flat Earth Society, crazy people, really vitriolic stuff. And you still see that today. You still see these wretched trolls on the internet attacking people personally, nastily. And once you've been attacked like that, when a citizen raises their, or a dentist or a scientist raises their head above the parapet and says anything negative about this holy practice, then boom, off come the cannonballs, the arrows, the spears, attacking you personally. And I can tell you, after 23 years of this crap, it's not very pleasant to be attacked as a professional and have your colleagues reading these kind of attacks on attacks, not on your science, but on your integrity. I'll give you a classic example. I wrote a book with two other colleagues. I think it's a darn good book. It's called The Case Against Fluoride. It was published in 2010. So what do they say about this book? They haven't written a commentary on the book, a comprehensive scientific commentary on the book. They just attack me. I'm just trying to make money by pushing this book, if you please. I'm happy to give the book away. I tell people to get it from the library. But this whole notion, I mean, they clearly judge me on their own standards. They're in it for make money. They're interested in making money. I'm not. I'm interested in protecting people, and I'm interested in protecting people's health and getting the truth out. But it does make me very upset. And they know it. They know that they can make people upset, and they know that they can get scientists to keep away from the issue, which is their mission. Keep the scientists, keep the dentists, keep the doctors away from the science. And unfortunately, Patrick, they are keeping the major media away from the science. This major study from 2017 has never been covered by the New York Times.
Is that right?
Huh. Or the Washington Post, or the National Public Radio. I mean, it is appalling. Think about it for a second. About 200 million people in this country of ours are being exposed to a substance every day. And as far as pregnant women is concerned, it's possibly a bit lowering the intelligence and mental interfering with the mental development of their children. And they're not being warned by the health departments. They're not, even going back to the initial part of this discussion, they're not being warned by the very agencies that funded these key studies. I mean, it's tragic. We are trying to do it the best we can. We have a campaign right now called Mums to Be campaign that's trying to get the information to pregnant women, don't use fluoridated water during pregnancy, don't use fluoridated toothpaste during pregnancy, keep away from fluoride when your baby is developing in your womb, mums-to-be.
Okay, let's take a quick little break here. Great stuff. Thank you for coming on, Paul. I tell you what, it's just like, how do you understand that? Paul Conant, and if you care to join us, do patrick@oneradionetwork.com. One of the kind of alternative things we've been talking about for the last three or four months is a product that we came across for your teeth, and it's pearl, just pure pearl, just pearl. And Dr. Rulin Zhu, PhD gal, quantum physicist, born in China, she kind of grew up with this whole, her whole consciousness about natural healing and such. And she came up with a way how you could take real pearl, not the mother pearl or some other kind of make-believe pearl, but real pearl, and powder it without losing its cellular matrix, kind of the magic mojo of pearl, and put it into a powder. Now, you can get it in capsules, but we recommend that you go ahead and get the powder, because it's a little more flexibility to kind of put it on your toothbrush, and you can just put a little, and it comes with a little plastic spoon. You can put some in your face cream, and then, you know, I do two or three little spoonfuls of it. It's really good calcium and magnesium and proteins to take inside your body, very absorbable. It's really a great product. People love it for the teeth. We're getting lots of emails about it. And, I mean, you could just use, the closest product, which we like, which is the stabilized chlorine dioxide, also known as Miracle Mineral Supplement. But somehow they got a patent on using a stabilized form. And otherwise, they've actually thrown people in jail. We've had him on the show, a fellow who spent 4 years in the slammer for selling the same thing, but don't get me started there. Chlorine, stabilized chlorine dioxide, called Miracle Mineral Supplement. You know, the Jim Humble thing with the down in the jungles of of Africa, and helping people get rid of all kinds of diseases. But anyway, I don't want to digress too far. But you could use the closest, and then also the pearl serum, and I think you'd really be good to go. It seems to actually fill up some little bitty holes. You can look real carefully. It's just sparkles, and your teeth look very pearly. And the pearl has been used in Ayurvedic medicine and also in Chinese medicine for a long, long time, thousands of years, for a beauty thing, and also in face creams. So she's on to something. It's a great product. If you click on the front page of One Radio Network on the Pearl Seam little green container, it's going to take you to a two-pack, which has got a great a discount on getting two. That's what we recommend. You can put one in your bathroom and then one out on your counter so you can play with it. But if you don't want two, you could just click around and just get one. But I would get the two as long as you get a nice, nice discount. Pearl Seam, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. I think you'll really like it. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these Sir Thrival links take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. We get quite a few emails on the whole libido thing. It's almost a epidemic in our culture. In my opinion, one of the reasons is because God love it, people, you just turn around and a doctor, if you're not careful, will put you on a statin drug. I mean, I know there's people in my family, girls that they're putting on statins for, you know. And, you know, the studies are out there that the higher your cholesterol is as you reach 50, 60, 70, 80 revolutions around the sun, the longer you live. I mean, huge studies all over Europe. Just the opposite. And why they put people on statins, goodness only knows. But, you know, guys 40, 40, 30, 40, 52, they'll put them on statins, and then they'll lower their cholesterol level to 120 or so, and you can't even make hormones, and you can't even make testosterone. And then they give them, Viagra or something like that to make things south of the border work. It's tragic what's going on. But we think if you first thing we do, we recommend, and you know, we don't give medical advice, but if a guy's right in or calling, is to just get off these statins, figure out a way to get off of them. I mean, if it were me, I'd just get off them, but you know, but I'm crazy. I mean, your cholesterol level is, God, doesn't matter. The higher, the better, in my life. But anyway, so get your cholesterol level back up, and then you can do things like pine pollen and elk velvet antler. Maybe you could throw in some maca or even goji berries or shizandra from Shen Blossom on our website. Those are two also very good things to take for this kind of a thing. Also, Shilajit is a good one too. Shilajit is a good one too. And you can get capsules of that. But you could just do the pine pollen, the elk velvet antler, and I think you're going to have some really, really nice results kind of quickly. And this is at a deep, deep level that you build your whole endocrine system and your whole urinary tract system, the whole thing with the in your gonads and, you know, and everything. And it just builds and builds and builds. And you'll go, I'm 72 revolutions around the sun, and everybody's happy south of the border. And it's just, and I've been taking pine pollen and elk velvet for, I guess, 10 years or now, and keep my cholesterol levels up. And you can make babies when you're 90 or 100 if you want. I mean, really? Yeah, you can. Yes, you can. I just practice making babies. So that's the story on pine pollen, elk velvet antler, and any thrival link on oneradionetwork.com.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Paul Conant is here, and his specialty is fluoride. It has been for about 25 years. He co-authored a book in 2010, The Case Against Fluoride. And Mr. Conant, you know, we're talking about things south of the border, you know, libido and all that. Does fluoride, I have no idea, does fluoride affect that at all?
No idea.
Oh, no.
Well, there is some, sorry, I beg your pardon. There is some evidence that fluoride interferes with testosterone levels, which I assume is very similar.
Hmm.
Yeah, reproductive effects. There was a study done, I've forgotten the date now, maybe 1993, a scientist with the FDA looked at reproduction, fertility, found lower fertility in counties in the United States with levels of fluoride above 3 parts per million. This is natural levels now.
I see.
Above 3 parts per million.
Okay.
So, yes, yeah. There is some evidence that fluoride interferes with reproduction, fertility, testosterone levels.
Here's George. George is in Tampa. He has a question for you. I'm wondering if your guest can tell us if... Oh, I hear you, Kitty. Hi, Kitty.
Yes, I have the most lovely cat.
Hi, Kitty.
Her name is Mimi, after Puccini's La Boheme.
Hello, Mimi. Hello, Mimi. I'm wondering if, I'll read this email. He says that, do we know if fluoride gets absorbed into vegetables that are grown organically, but they use fluoride water to water them?
Oh, yes, that can happen. The uptake by plants varies. So you have to be concerned. In fact, my wife, that was one of her big concerns. Huh. She was a very, very keen organic gardener, and obviously watering the garden with the tap water till she got round to the notion of collecting it in barrels from the, you know, from the roof, that kind of stuff. So she was very concerned about sprinkling fluoridated water onto her carefully grown organic vegetables. But it varies by plant as to how much
it'll take
fluoride
up.
Is taken up by the roots. Yeah.
But there is science that shows that some plants and more than others take up fluoride if you use that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I tell you one plant that does, and that's tea. The tea plant grows very well in high fluoride soils in places like India, China, Japan, and elsewhere. So both green tea and black tea have levels of fluoride. You should limit your, if you want to limit your fluoride exposure, you have to limit your tea consumption.
But is there enough there in tea, to affect people?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Huh. In terms of levels, a few cups of tea can give you levels that we're concerned about in terms of lowering IQ in children.
For really? Example,
we quantified the level from the Chinese studies. We estimate that a 5 IQ point drop was associated with exposure of to 1.4 milligrams per day. And cups of tea can contribute to a fraction, a milligram or more per day. So it's ironic that some of the countries which are fluoridated, like Australia, like New Zealand, like Ireland, which has mandatory fluoridation, are very, very big tea drinkers. The last country in the world that needs mandatory fluoridation is Ireland, where you've already got very high tea consumption. The same applied to New Zealand, another high tea drinking country, and all the Anglo countries, as anything associated with England in any way, shape, or form, will end up being high tea drinkers.
So is the fluoridation in general, say in the United States, is it more or less than it was when we last talked 10 years ago?
It's crept up a little bit. The irony is that we've had success, and you go to our webpage, you can see there's over 200 communities have stopped fluoridation since 2010, and a lot of them are in the United States. But whilst we win smaller communities where education can really play a factor, you have mandatory fluoridation taking care of millions of people. Like there were in one decision, I think 21 million people were fluoridated in the metropolitan district of Los Angeles, because they introduced mandatory fluoridation in California in 1996. Not that all communities in California have followed that mandate, but it's certainly on the books. And when they took it off the books and made it a reality in Los Angeles, and I've forgotten the date where that happened, but all of a sudden, 21 million more people were fluoridated. So their numbers can sort of... I don't think the significance is huge. It goes up dramatically. I mean, I don't think it means that they've suddenly got persuasive arguments and so on. They've just used their political influence.
It's strange. Do we know exactly how it affects the IQ? I mean, what this stuff does in the brain? Is that real science or is it conjecture?
No. There's real science here. There's over 300 animal and human studies. And many of those animal studies have explored the mechanisms. You've got a variety of receptors, nicotinic receptors. You've got various enzymes in the brain, acetylcholine esterase, which are inhibited by fluoride. Yes, there are many. They know where in the brain it accumulates most in the I'm trying to think of the name now. But anyway, yes, they've located places in the brain where it's taken up most and identified various mechanisms. And now with the incredible advances of genetics, you're able to find the genes that are switched on when people are exposed to fluoride. And many of those genes that are switched on are involved in the development of the brain. So I don't think there's any question that there's solid biochemistry underlying concerns about fluoride's impact on mental development. And then you take another level. You have animal experiments where they put animals in mazes, and you know, they train them in a way to find the cheese in the maze, and they found that the animals exposed to fluoride are less capable of remembering, less capable of learning in these maze examinations, which is very much akin to what is happening to our children. They're less able to understand, less able to memorize, and so on. There are various aspects of behavior. And one of the criticisms of the IQ studies is that the IQ itself is a rather blunt instrument, and we need people to go into very specific mental activities and investigate them with the same kind of studies that I've talked about, the comparing the IQ, comparing children from high fluoride villages, low fluoride village, or most recently, based upon individual measurements, looking at much more specific mental capacities.
Yeah, David, Paul Conant is with us. Do we know the minimum amount of cleaning up the water of filters to get fluoride out? What it takes out of the tap water?
Yeah, this is a good question. One can't be too dogmatic about this, but what I can say is if you look at that BASHASH study, the U.S. government-funded study that I spent some time on, and you can find on our webpage, go to our webpage and look for, I think it's item number 4 in the revolving masthead at the top. So the homepage, you'll see these trending topics fly past you, and one of them is the most important IQ study to date, the BASHASH study, in utero study, and then you have the next one is the 53 other IQ studies. But based upon that BASHASH study, as far as the effect on cognitive function, the measurement of IQ for age of 4, the association was found down to 0.2 parts per million of fluoride in the mother's urine, almost the lowest level looked at. So as far as women living in fluoridated communities, they're going to be impacted. According to this, if this experiment can be repeated, and we have reason to believe that it has been repeated, but it hasn't been published yet, it's a huge concern. A pregnant woman doesn't want to be exposed to any fluoride, and any health official that continues to promote fluoridation in this country in the light of this material should be fired. They're either not keeping up with the literature, or they are putting a policy in front of protecting the people. And I don't say that lightly. Let me say it again. Any public health official that continues to promote water fluoridation is either demonstrating a complete, utter, irresponsible ignorance of the literature, or is putting a policy in front of his responsibility of protecting the public.
Oh.
It's absolutely reprehensible that pregnant women, even before they've stopped fluoridation, which I think they'll have to do, but maybe before the end of this year, by the way, there is another issue which I desperately need to talk about. Oh. We have a lawsuit coming up. We have a lawsuit against the EPA under the Toxic Substance Control Act saying to the EPA, you should forbid the deliberate addition of fluoride to the drinking water because of its neurotoxicity.
Wow.
And potential to lower IQ in children. And since we launched that, this major study has come out. In other words, we gave them all the evidence on neurotoxicity before 2017. And then in 2017, we got the most important study published. It's worse than we thought, because we thought it was exposure to infants and children, but it's exposure to the fetus. And I think, Patrick, you'd understand the significance of that, because the you know, as far as the toxicity of a substance is concerned, it gets worse as you get younger. So it's worse for children than old people. It's worse than for infants, babies, than children. And now it's worse for the fetus than the infant. It's all about body weight. When you are trying to compare the toxicity of a substance and you're looking at the human being at different ages, and you do it by body weight, obviously the creature with the lowest body weight is going to be the one that you're concerned about most, and that's the fetus.
Yeah.
Brain development. And the specific, going back to biology, which I know you're keen about, whilst the mother's breast filters fluoride, in other words, mother's breast milk contains very little fluoride, thank God. The mother's breast milk is protecting the infant, but not fluoridated water, of course, if you use formula. The placenta, fluoride crosses the placental membrane. The fetus is not protected from fluoride. It can get into the fetus. It can get into its brain. The blood-brain barrier is not fully developed. And another thing which is incredibly serious is that the baby has no thyroid. The fetus has no thyroid gland when it comes into existence. What thyroid hormone levels the baby gets is completely dependent upon the thyroid hormone levels of the mother. So if any substance out there interferes with the mother's thyroid function and she doesn't produce enough thyroid hormones, the baby is going to be impacted, and one of the results of that is lowered IQ.
Really?
So that's the possible, you after mechanisms before, but probably the most likely and plausible mechanism for why fluoride lowers the IQ of the baby, the infant, is lowered thyroid function in the mother.
And
we have a problem in the United States with millions of people, women, with too little iodine in their diet.
So there's no doubt with what you've seen that a mom of 30 years old or 35 drinking fluoridated water just out of the tap, it's impairing thyroid function.
Yes, yes, that is a real possibility, that fluoride interferes with the thyroid gland, and there's a study to that effect just published in 2018. What they looked at was thyroid function as measured by TSH levels, thyroid-stimulating hormone.
Right.
As the woman gets hypothyroid, underactive thyroid, the indicator for that is higher TSH levels.
Yeah.
And whilst when they looked at the whole population, they did not find a relationship between fluoride exposure and TSH levels for the whole population. What they did find is that when a woman was already compromised by low iodine intake, they were either modest or high, low thyroid, low iodine intake, modest to low iodine intake, they were compromised. Their TSH levels went up with fluoride exposure. So fluoride exposure makes women who've already got low iodine exposure, makes their situation worse.
And you could just, I mean, even you picture, say, Los Angeles, and I don't know how many millions of people there around that city, the possibilities that moms are drinking bottled water or really good filtered water, it's not very high. I mean, just because of the economic structure, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
well, that's
they're probably
very
just they're probably just drinking out of the tap most of these.
This is a very important issue. We have taken on last year, Fluoride Action Network took on a new staff member. Her name is Robin Lewis. She is an environmental justice activist. She's been an environmental justice activist for a number of years. And the reason we did that is that whilst the dentists promote fluoridation on the basis of trying to help children in low-income areas, and it is very, very true that children in low-income levels have worse tooth decay, worse teeth than children from high-income areas, it is also true that those same parents cannot afford to avoid fluoridated water.
What are they going to do?
They don't want a bottle feed.
What are they going to do?
They're trapped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're trapped. And also, There's every reason to believe that their fluoride toxicity is more, they're more susceptible for fluoride toxicity because of poorer diet, statistically, not inevitably, but lower diet, already exposed to more pollution because they live in inner cities, they get more diesel fumes, etc., etc., etc. So the last people, I've said this, the last people in my view, the last people that should have children who should have their IQ lowered are children from low-income areas. They've already had so many strikes against them.
Yes, sir.
It's not their fault. It's not their parents' fault. The last thing you should do is to expose them now to a substance can lower their intelligence still further.
Mm-hmm. What's the connection between taking iodine internally or rubbing on your skin, good stuff, and the fluoride getting into the body? Do we know the connection?
Yes, that is certainly there are people like Dr. Brownstein,
right,
very strong in promoting iodine. Dr. David Kennedy recommends iodine be used as a much safer disinfectant, bactericide, call it what you want, in the mouth to fight. I mean, Dr. David Kennedy's position is that tooth decay is a disease. It's caused by bacteria, Streptococcus mutans, and you need to kill that bacteria. And it's possible at high doses that fluoride does kill those bacteria, but it's a dangerous pesticide to use in the mouth. There are safer pesticides or bactericides, and one of those is iodine. And yes, as I understand it, if you apply iodine to your skin, you will get a yellow tincture of iodine. If
right.
you apply it to the skin, you will get that familiar yellow-orange coloration of the skin. And the argument that is made, and it sounds very rational to me, is if that color disappears over, I don't know what the given time is,
right.
but if it disappears, say over an hour or so, then it means your body is taking up the iodine and you are not getting enough iodine. Your body is telling you you're not getting enough iodine. So the approach is to apply that tincture of iodine to the skin until it clearly persists. And that at that point, you know your body is getting enough iodine. You don't need to keep applying it to the skin. That seems to be a relatively safe approach.
We've heard that quite a bit. Mr. Khan, is there any science, real science, that shows if one brushes their teeth with, say, Crest, the original Crest with iodine, that it can be detrimental to the body?
They haven't gone that far. Detrimental to the body. If we include dental fluorosis, which is a damage to the growing tooth enamel, which is the first visible sign of fluoride toxicity, you know, it's very, very clear that our kids are getting too much fluoride, not just from fluoridated water, but from fluoridated toothpaste. There was a study done in 1995 by Pendris who showed that the prevalence of dental fluorosis went up if the child brushed his teeth twice a day compared to once his teeth.
And what does dental fluorosis mean? What does that mean?
It's a mottling, a discoloration of the enamel. Yeah. And they knew that this was going to happen, by the way. When they started the trials in 1945, they anticipated that about 10-15% of the children would get dental fluorosis in its mildest form, very mild dental fluorosis, which impacts up to 25% of the enamel. They thought this would be, most people wouldn't notice this, and it was a trade-off for lowering tooth decay. Run the clock forward. It's now over 60% of children 12 to 15 have some form of dental fluorosis, and not just in its very mild condition. So, yes. And when the dentists are saying this, well, this isn't just water fluoridation. They say, this isn't water fluoridation. Water fluoridation is only 10 or 15%. No, water fluoridation contributes to it. Water fluoridation contributes to it, and it's the one that we can change most quickly by stopping water fluoridation. Then they point fingers at fluoridated toothpaste. So even the dentists are admitting that our kids are being overexposed to fluoride, and some of it's coming from fluoridated toothpaste, and the kids are not spitting it out. And again, in terms of irresponsibility, the toothpaste manufacturers, who have on the FDA warning, don't swallow, flavor the toothpaste, bubblegum flavor, banana flavor, strawberry flavor, encouraging the children to swallow. There's a mouthwash now, a fluoridated mouthwash being advertised on television. I saw it a few days ago. That is bubblegum flavor. Now tell me, for a kid to use, and this is meant for, this is aimed for children, why flavor it bubblegum? I mean, I don't think that many seniors want bubblegum flavor, but maybe to encourage children to swallow fluoride is a criminal offense, certainly against health. And yet these toothpaste manufacturers are getting away with it. The FDA that requires these warnings, don't swallow your toothpaste, only using a pea-sized amount, a grain of rice amount for children 1 to 3, are allowing the toothpaste manufacturers to target children with these flavored toothpaste. It is criminal.
Paul Conant is with us, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Hold on there, Mr. Conant. We're going to wrap it up. I just have to do this, and then we'll be back with you. Previously with Brandon on organic Shizandra containing the five tastes.
Bitter, sour, sweet, pungent, and salty. It's similar to the emotions that we were talking about last hour, you know, how like worry or pensiveness affected the spleen, like you were mentioning. Every taste affects one of the five organ systems, five yin organ systems, or one of the five elements. In Chinese medicine, you can basically condense all energy in the universe down to five elements, which is fire, earth, metal, water, wood. Because everything's interconnected, everything can just be distilled down into these five elements. So all five flavors, as they enter into your body, start sending signals to your organ systems to basically create a response or an effect.
The vibration or the information in the Shizandra.
Right, and that's why it's really key to have an energetically vital product that has all those five flavors and all the tastes.
Yes, indeed. They go through great lengths to get this Shizandra to you in amazing quality. Click and order right on the front page, Organic Shizandra, OneRadioNetwork.com. We are going to order up some sulfur right after the show today. So if you'd like to get on this order, we will be doing it by noon Central Time. That'd be 2 hours from right now. It is a great product, pure organic sulfur. Reading latest blog. Excuse me there, just choking on my water. Hold on. Latest blog from Dr. Thomas Cohen. And he's doing a little, it's funny that we brought that commercial up. He's doing Shizandra and sulfur and something else after his workouts. And he's really been experimenting. He's quite a scientist. Yeah, that's really cool. Sulfur, yeah. Sulfur and Shizandra and Shilajit. Oh, we mentioned that. And he was saying that without adequate sulfur stores, detoxification is very impaired. Lactic and acid tends to accumulate in the tissues. And you know what he says about lactic acid and the heart, and that's the whole thing about is the heart is not a pump thing. So this is a good thing for your body. Pure organic sulfur from OneRadioNetwork.com. We have three prices. United States, Canada, and worldwide. And then if you like more than 4 pounds, email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We only have about 6-7 minutes left, Mr. Conant. Let's get through a few things before we go. Somebody wants to know an email. I'm just going to paraphrase. What are some of the other sources that we get? We can get fluoride other than toothpaste and the water?
Certainly, some natural foods are high in fluoride. Beware of bones. Don't eat fish bones.
Be careful of
mechanically deboned meat, like patties. If you're going to eat meat, eat whole meat, not processed meat. Tea, I've mentioned already. Then, in addition to that, there's fluoride in commercial fertilizers. So commercially produced food is going to contain fluoride. Fluoride is used in pesticides, so you have to be wary of the residues of fluoride on food. So eat organic if you possibly can afford it, and we should be supporting campaigns that try to get organic food to low-income areas for obvious reasons.
Yeah, so I don't know, did we ever answer the question? Do you know, or is it out of your bailiwick there about the minimum amount of what it takes to get it out of the the tap water fluoride? What kind of a filter system?
The carbon filters, the activated carbon filters like the Brita filter, do not do
right.
it. The ones which you can be certain do it are reverse osmosis and distillation. You can get tabletop distillation.
Distill.
Another one which is you can get from health food stores are activated bone char. Bone is a good absorbent of fluoride, so this is a natural way of removing it. It's used in large scale in places like India to remove natural fluoride.
What's it called? We've heard about bone filters.
Bone char. No, this is bone char.
Char.
Bone char. So you'd have to ask at the health store. Yeah. They should know.
So that makes sense because the bones, it affects the bones. So that would make sense that it would be...
It accumulates in the bone. Yeah.
So is that what it does? Do you know anything about the pineal gland and fluoride?
Yes, fluoride accumulates, the human pineal gland, according to Jennifer Luke, accumulates a fluoride. It's a magnet for fluoride. It has a very high perfusion rate of blood. It's a very small tissue, and it has these hydroxy... apatite crystals, just like the teeth and the bone. It's a magnet for fluoride, and Jennifer Luke found very high levels in the pineal glands of about 20 corpses that she analyzed from London.
Really?
Some years ago. And she, in the animal experiments, she also found what is quite consistent with that is the animals exposed to fluoride had lower melatonin production.
Wow. Do we know what gets fluoride out of these different glands?
Well, no, that's difficult. Once it gets in, the bone turns over. The half-life of the bone is about 20 years, we think. So the half-life of fluoride in the bone is about 20 years. The bone is continually turning over. So the good news is that if you remove all the sources of fluoride, and many of them, then... eventually the fluoride will dissipate, come out of the bone, and then get excreted. But it's a long, long process.
Where does this stuff come from originally? I mean, why is there so much out there that needs to be used or is available to buy?
It's very abundant in the Earth's crust. It's the 13th most abundant element. The levels in the sea is 1.4 parts per million. But what is interesting is though it was readily abundant to nature, nature during evolution has contrived to keep it away from the breastfed baby. The levels of fluoride in mother's milk are extremely low,
really?
Which means that the bottle-fed baby gets about 200 times more fluoride than nature intended. And sometimes they like to say that fluoride is natural. Well, it is natural. From a geological perspective, it is natural. It is in the rocks. But the rocks came before biology. Biology has done everything in its can to keep fluoride away from living things. The bone is sequestering. It's keeping fluoride away from the soft tissues. That's why it accumulates there. It's a protective mechanism, we think.
Uh-huh.
And as I said, the mother's milk keeps it away from the baby. If you get to lower creatures in evolution, you find that they have fluoride exporting proteins in their system. As the fluoride levels go up in bacteria and various smaller creatures, then they have these mechanisms to excrete the fluoride from their cells or from their tissues.
Hey, overall, just big picture, are dentists today just ongoing recommending fluoride toothpaste to their patients?
Yes, I think most dentists still see the need for fluoride in dentistry and in these products. But many, many dentists behind the scenes, that many will not speak up in public. Some will. We have several hundred signing our professional statement opposing fluoridation. But most will tell you privately that they're against fluoridation, but daren't speak up because of the pressures from the ADA and the lobbyists for fluoride. They're very powerful and very intimidating.
Can you put a percentage, just guessing before we go here, the percentage of tap water that is fluoridated in the United States?
It's over 70%.
70%?
Over 70% of the public water systems, which are big, you know, the big ones. Not the rural, some of the rural systems are very small, which are not part of it. But I think 70% of the public water systems are fluoridated.
Do they use this similar amounts of fluoride in the water?
Yeah, they all keep within the 0.7, or supposed to, between 0.7 and 1.2. Mm-hmm. The recommended level now is 0.7 parts per million, which is still 175 times higher than the level in mother's milk. To put it another way, over half the people in the world today that drink fluoridated water live in the United States. So less than 400 million people worldwide are drinking fluoridated water. About 200 million live in the United States. 97% of Europeans are not drinking fluoridated water. Most of the world does not drink fluoridated water. We are the odd men out. We tried to persuade the rest of the world to do it. Most of the rest of the world said no thank you on ethical grounds and on the grounds that the health issues had not been resolved. And now we know that the health issues are getting worse. So, in short, we need to stop water fluoridation without further delay. And I think that will be catalyzed by a lawsuit which will be held in August of next year in San Francisco. Secondly, in the interim, we must get warnings to pregnant women not to expose themselves to fluoride, particularly through fluoridated water and possibly as well not using fluoridated toothpaste during pregnancy. We should also be warning parents not to use fluoridated tap water to make up formula, and we need better ways to educate low-income families and help them avoid fluoridated water.
Mr. Conner, thanks so much for being here. We enjoyed having you on the show. Your main website, again, is fluoridealert.org, right?
That's right, and remember to spell it F-L-U-O.
All
not
right.
F-L-O-U. Common spelling mistake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, sir. We appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you, Patrick. Bye-bye now.
It. Paul, boy, good stuff for you. And now we're going to learn how to detox stuff out of the body with somebody I think you're going to find quite interesting.